I am delighted to be here with everyone, and I just would like to get started by hearing from just a few people what drew you to join this class, and that will give me a sense of what it is that people might want me to focus on, and it will help me orient myself to how to approach the material. So would anyone be willing to say just a couple of words? Hi, Jean.
I wanted to take this course because whenever I'm visiting my family, I seem to have a problem with my oldest daughter. And I would like to learn how to giraffe fight by Skype.
Great. Thank you. I'm not imagining that I would say anything specific about Skype. I'm totally confident that whatever principles we discuss will apply in many ways of communicating, least of all email, but Skype is in real time and people see each other, so it does help. Sarah?
I just noticed that there are conversations that I avoid having for fear of just not being understood or, making people uncomfortable. So I guess I'd like to be able to talk about things that are really important to me in my life with a couple of family members and extended family members without there being negativity between us.
Thank you. Let's hear from Kolya.
The title of this class really excited me, particularly as I imagined fights I have with my husband unfolding in a different way, and particularly a question about keeping my heart open to the other person's needs when I go into defensive mode.
Yes. Thank you. Jason.
Yeah, I was really intrigued by the title, but also by something that you wrote in the description of the course in terms of having our choices squashed down into two choices of either submitting or rebelling.
Yeah.
And I just find that comes alive for me so often. A lot of the work I do is with restorative circles, and I facilitate a lot of fights. But in my own fights, I get so locked up sometimes when I hear somebody who I live with asserting themselves. And I just start to think, what an asshole. And I'm just unable to return to the humanness of the person so often. It's really astounding.
Thank you. I'm really appreciating what you pinpointed, the piece about either-or thinking that is so much at the heart of what makes it hard to have a productive fight. Early in my life, in my 20s, I had a relationship with someone. It lasted 1.5 years. We had about 7 fights in that whole time, and never the same fight twice. And this is a model for me of how life can be. It's not fightless or conflictless. It's the fights are productive. Once you go through it, and you go through it with care and perseverance, you learn all there is to learn. You don't have to have the same fight again. We have the same fight over and over and over again with people because we don't walk all the way through to the other end for some reason. So thank you for bringing that up. And David.
When I was preparing your little notes or trying to for the course, I realized that I didn't have much content of conflicted conversations in recent history, and that's because I avoid conflict as much as I possibly can. So when you described in your course description the option of running away or becoming aggressive, I take the running away option, and as a result, I'm not very good at getting my needs met because I run away rather than trying to express them. So.
Yes, and let me give you some compassion for why you might do this. And you are so much not alone. It's because we have been given two options that we are familiar with. One is to try to have a conflict and make things worse. And the other is to avoid the conflict. And if we are not familiar or habituated to the extraordinary possibility of transcending the conflict to the other side of it, each time we try to have a challenging conversation with someone and make things worse is going to reinforce the idea that conflict is best avoided. Hopefully, we'll give you some tools so that you can walk towards conflict with at least curiosity. Thank you. And Tammy and Jean, and then I have enough to get me going.
I have a lot of conflict in my marriage, and it seems like, well, it doesn't seem like my husband is kind of controlling, and so I'm sure there's a lot of issues involved, but somehow we never seem to, that resolving of the conflict, it just kind of stops. I don't really enjoy conflict anyway. I'm more submitting, people-pleasing. I don't like to get him upset, but when I do try to move forward, somehow we get stopped. So like you were talking about, the same conflicts come up over and over, and I'd really like to, you know, have some resolution.
Mm-hmm. Got it. Thank you. And Cecily?
People here do totally avoid conflict, and it's very hard to engage. And there's several places in my life right now where fight seems to be what goes on, and how to resolve it, those are issues. And my issues are around, do I go to let go and let be? What do I do about it always? Because I'm the one who gets angry.
Mm-hmm.
And I do have trouble thinking of their needs in that time.
Great, thank you. So I'm really appreciating hearing this bouquet of experiences from different people that kind of like give us the range of challenge that we experience, all of which stems from a difficulty in making inside ourselves room for our own needs alongside the other person's needs. Making room inside us for the other person's needs alongside our own. Now, why would it be difficult to hold both? It may seem self-evident, and yet it bears kind of like uncoupling and putting it out. There's a reason why it's hard for us to hold both of them alongside each other. I'm not even talking equally important or not, just to be able to hold them both. What makes it challenging for you to hold them both? Think about it for a moment. And I'd like to hear from a couple of people, what makes it challenging internally to hold them both? Because that's the trick. That's all. Ultimately, that's all we need to know.
I think what makes it very challenging for me is that one or the other is mesmerizing.
What do you mean by mesmerizing?
If I'm trying to hold both or work with competing needs, I tend to get mesmerized by one or the other for a while and then kind of buried and overwhelmed. And maybe it's because the process gets so discursive, when that happens, it's sort of claustrophobic, and it's hard to believe that stepping out of that and feeling the energy of both could actually take me anywhere better or clearer, because I'm well trained to kind of, you know, figure it out.
You've said a few things, most of which I understood, one of which I still don't understand. Let me name the themes that I got. One is the idea of competition. The idea that the needs are competing.
Uh-huh.
This is a big deal.
Okay.
This is what we've been trained to believe, that needs are in competition. So one of the things that I want to come back to and really take apart is, why do we believe that needs are in competition?
Oh, poverty mentality. Especially when it comes to somebody else, if there's a pending conflict and I'm afraid of my needs not getting met by another person because they're angry at me or they're going to withhold, then it does seem that they're in competition.
Okay, so
can't have both. Why could I have both? I could barely have one need met is kind of where I would go.
So there's a consciousness of scarcity.
Yeah.
And with it comes fear about your own needs getting met.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you. I that was one thing that I understood. I want to talk to you about what still is puzzling to me is what you mean by mesmerized. What do you mean by getting mesmerized by one or the other?
It's the word that came to me. I don't know if I can say much more about it, except thinking about trying to feel two things at once and just getting mesmerized by one instead to the neglect of the other. Maybe because of this kind of tendency of thinking I can move on from one once I figure it out.
Yeah. Oh, that's the other thing that you said, is some idea that the task is to figure it out.
Yeah. I don't think that's true. I don't think it works, but that's a habit that I have. That is also mesmerizing.
Yeah. And the whole idea that we are supposed to figure things out is in itself rooted in not trusting ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
To just be in some kind of a flow that provides. That the flow of life is about meeting needs, and if we just stay with that flow, it will happen. We have to figure it out, which is an attempt to make something happen rather than allow it to happen.
Yes, which is scary when there's conflict, right?
Yeah. So what I'm focused on right now is the word conflict, the image of conflict conjures up something very scary for many people. And my sense is that there is a self-fulfilling prophecy, that what's scary is the idea that I won't know how to hold on to my own needs as well as with care in relation to the other person's needs. And then I go into some intensity of what am I going to do? How can I do it if there isn't room for both of us? So thank you. I am appreciating your response. I think Bonnie was next.
I'm afraid there's not enough time to meet both needs.
Yeah, so that's kind of like another version of scarcity.
Right.
It's a time scarcity.
Right.
But it doesn't matter what the scarcity is. It can be scarcity of time. It can be scarcity of material resources, it can be scarcity of love, whatever it is, it's an idea that there's scarcity. Yeah?
Definitely.
Thank you. And Ronnie, what's it for you?
For me, it has to do with the intensity of my feelings. I immediately go into story and talking to myself, and so in doing that, it's hard to hold the other person's needs because I'm so wrapped up in the emotion.
Yeah, and what brings the emotion? Because it's what brings the emotion that interferes. It's the emotion is already step two.
Well, yeah, because I'm telling myself, and somebody says something to me and we're in conflict, I'm telling myself that this person doesn't understand, whatever. It's what I'm telling myself that fuels me.
Okay, so let's push the point for a moment, because I'm sure you're not the only one that goes in this direction. This person doesn't understand, they don't care. So what? What's the fear in that? If they don't understand, if you are relaxed, you can connect with them, and ultimately they will. What makes it so difficult for you or anyone else when somebody doesn't understand?
Well, because that need for understanding isn't met.
And so what? So if a need is not met, what is the big deal about it?
Well, I can tell you it feels like I won't survive it.
So there's fear of survival for you.
Yeah, I mean, not survival in the sense that I'm going to die here, but it is, it's something survival, yeah.
So I want to invite you for a moment to really, really ask yourself, what makes it so hard to tolerate not being understood? Because one of the things that have become really clear to me is that in order to live in this world in the way that we want to, one of the things we need to learn is how to be at peace with unmet needs. Because it's the experience of unmet needs that is the breeding ground of violence. When our needs are met, we're never going to be violent. Make sense?
Oh, yeah. Great question.
So what is it that you can do to be able to relax and be at peace with unmet needs?
Ah, well, that's a different question. What I could do, if I thought to do it, was to take a deep breath or to give myself a little bit of empathy, to self-connect.
So you have tools and somehow you don't choose to use them. They're not on your radar screen.
I would say, rather than I don't choose to, I would say they're not on my radar screen. It doesn't occur to me at that moment.
Yeah. That's one of the things, is that we remain in some kind of fear habit that we don't know how to transcend with presence. So I would say for all of us, whenever our needs are not met, whatever we can do to extend the time before we're going to desperately do something about it, and do something about it could be suppressing the need. It's not necessarily fighting with someone to get our need met. It's just to the extent that we can hang out with the unmet need, we have more freedom. You with me?
Yes.
So whatever practices we can bring into the whatever the situation is that allow us to increase our capacity to stay with an unmet need long enough to choose how we want to respond, that is probably a huge increase in the likelihood that we will do conflict well. Does this feel complete for the moment?
This is fine. Thank you, Mickey.
Uh-huh. Thank you. Okay, David?
I just wanted to mention that it's hard for me to hold my needs and the other's needs at the same time because it seems like my attention is either with one or the other. And to do them both simultaneously, maybe you don't mean literally simultaneously, but I tend to forget one or the other.
Yeah, I do mean them simultaneously. On the energetic plane, we may not be able to hold, you know, meticulous awareness in the same moment of two.
Yes.
But it's the energetic infinity inside that I'm after.
That's helpful.
And it's when we can do that, we start relaxing.
I like the relaxing part.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure that everyone on this call has been through the experience of having conflict, somehow managing to engage with it well, and then on the other side of it, having more closeness. Haven't you had that experience in your life?
I certainly have.
Yeah. So the thing is not about that we don't know what the experience is. It's about being able to make that experience happen more reliably. And less by magic, somehow it happened this time and we don't know why.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Thank you. And Elizabeth.
For me, all the above, but also when I'm starting a conversation, I know my needs and then I lose track of my needs because the conversation goes so fast that I don't know what my needs are anymore and I cannot keep track of them. I'm kind of lost. So therefore, then I feel like I'm becoming very small and the other person is the only one counting, and I lose myself in listening to their need, and I get lost in the dialogue.
Uh-huh. And why is it that you don't know what your needs are anymore? What happens inside? What are you telling yourself inside that makes you lose your needs?
I think I go in my head and I tell myself I'm not going to be able to do it. That maybe I don't know what my needs are. That maybe I need to practice more to find out what they are.
That this was probably an issue that you've had way before you learned about NVC.
Mm-hmm.
So forget about needs.
Mm-hmm.
What makes it hard to trust that you matter?
What comes for me right now is that maybe a habit that when I would voice something, it's not important.
And so there are experiences that you've had of where you tried to speak up for yourself and it was not received in the way that you were hoping it would be.
Yes.
Yeah, so...
Yeah, it's easier to give up and say, well, I don't know. And I keep doing that. I don't know. I don't know anymore.
Yeah.
But even if I pause, like you were saying, pause and slow down, which is very helpful for me, I don't know what's next. I'm like, I feel lost. I don't know where to go from there.
Okay, so I think the key phrase that I would want you to work on transforming within yourself in the course of this class is the idea that it's easier to give up. That's how you make it hard for yourself to live a fulfilling life. You've trained yourself to believe, based on your experiences, that it's easier to give up. Because the pain of trying and not succeeding is so acute.
Yes.
And so...
Frustrating.
Say that again?
And frustrating.
Frustrating.
Yes. Because yeah. Like I try and I don't get that relief, at least some relief about it.
Yes, if you don't try, there's relief. Yeah,
a familiar one.
Yes.
Yes.
But it's not a satisfying relief.
No,
it's not. Yeah.
Exactly.
It's kind of like Marshall Rosenberg used to talk about it. Here's the language that he used. We sleep on the floor to make sure that we don't fall off the bed.
Right.
So what you need to do is two things. One is to be willing to experience that pain of that frustration of not succeeding so that you can learn to distinguish between what happened in the past and what is happening now. And the other is to really learn what it is that you do when you try to speak up for yourself, that triggers the responses that are so frustrating for you. Because by now, I can imagine that your attempt to speak for your needs is so muted. For example, that's one way that it could be, that it doesn't even reach the ears of the other person. Or you already backpedal as you're trying to talk about your needs. Or even while you speak your needs, you say it's okay not to give them to me. Something along those lines that sounds familiar to you.
Mm-hmm.
So there's something about relearning what each one of us knew as a small child, which is to really ask for what we want, fully. That would be really important for you. And I'm wondering if there's a lot of emotion that is coming up for you just in hearing all this. I would imagine that there might be.
Yes, yes. I feel more hope than I was expecting, feeling more sadness, but I feel more hope right now.
Glad to hear that. So, let's hear from Tammy and Ronnie, and then I want to put you in small groups to do some beginning practice. So, Tammy.
Somewhere as a child, I think I learned that you're supposed to meet
you know, other people's needs kind of at your own expense, you know, inconvenience yourself. And so I feel really guilty if I assert my needs. When you said you almost backpedal as you're speaking about your needs to the last person, I thought, yeah, somehow there's some guilt with asking for my needs to be met. And then, you know, if someone else is uncomfortable with my needs, or somehow it might like infringe or affect them, then I just feel like, oh, well, I'm, you know, selfish or not good. And I think that is kind of played up in my relationship. They know where to go, and I automatically, you know, I already start off with that somehow.
Yeah. So you have a lot of self-judgment that is very hard to work your way through in order to actually speak for yourself.
And then when I do speak for myself, what happens? I guess I get, you know, where you said like the person doesn't understand, kind of maybe blamed or shamed or mm-hmm. something. And then I kind of fall into that loop.
Yeah.
I think, wow, okay, maybe I shouldn't have spoken up for myself. Maybe I did it the wrong way.
Yeah, so here is another thing, which is somebody else's displeasure is not the end of the world.
Yeah, well, if I could learn that, that'd change my life.
Yes. So it's learning how to receive another person's displeasure as information about what their needs are and what might make the situation work for both of you. The goal is to create something that works for both of you. This is what I mean by having your cake and eating it too.
Right. I think somehow there's probably a couple things. Sometimes I put their needs above mine, and somehow the displeasure either means that I'm being rejected and not accepted, and, you know, maybe I'm bad if I am not able to make it work.
Yeah. How does it feel to even say this? It sounds so painful and heavy.
Yeah, it is.
Have you had any moments in which you trusted your own humanity and lovability?
Yeah, it's such a different feeling. It's unreal, yeah. You know, I think I trusted myself more before, but now I've kind of, you know, doubt myself more frequently in the interaction that I have. But no, it's much better when I stick with trusting myself.
So what is important is for you to recover that trust. And in terms of what you can do in practice is, you would need to find places where you can be supported. Do you have any place that you know to go to for support?
Yes.
So it's kind of like, because this sounds like the internal pressure is pretty heavy,
mm-hmm.
that it's almost like trying little steps and then going to wherever you can go for support to be nourished, received, relax, then go back to the challenge, take a next step, go get support, and build up strength slowly in this way. That is what I imagine might help you.
Okay, thank you. I appreciate it.
Mm-hmm. So what I would like to do is I would like you to practice something that I never want you to do. So I want you to practice something that I would never recommend you do in life. Not only because I make a distinction between practice and life. Specifically, I'm going to ask you to do something that is likely to feel unnatural and difficult and puzzling, and it's really a muscle building exercise. So I'm going to ask you to create role plays of situations which are difficult for you. And you're going to have another, you know, another person in your group is going to be the other person in your conflict. They're going to say whatever the line is that would be hard for you to stay connected to yourself about. And you are going to practice expressing exactly what is going on inside of you. Regardless of whether you would ever say that in real life, you say it and you make a request, and then the other person is going to react however they're going to react, and then you do the exact same thing again. In other words, you never go to empathy. You only do expression. I would like to model it with anyone who is open to doing it. So if you are willing to volunteer to participate in either role, please press 1. Okay, we got Pamela. And,
hi, Mickey.
Hi, Pamela. Thank you for volunteering. And I'm looking for someone who will be the other person in the situation. Easier role to play. Thank you, Sarah. So, Pamela, what is the situation? Who is the person?
It's somebody that I was direct with on Monday about taking up too much time during a meeting. And I guess the line would be something like they said, I was really triggered by what you said, and we haven't talked about it yet.
Okay, great. So, Sarah, your instructions are to say that line, to kind of like embody somebody who just got triggered by whatever it is that Pamela said, and to just say, I got really triggered by what you said. And then, Pamela, your task is to express yourself as cleanly as you can, coming from the place of what your needs are, and make a request at the end. Really a connection request. And then, Sarah, you will just react again. Don't make it up. Just allow yourself to react in whatever way feels authentic. Is it clear to you, Sarah?
Yes.
Okay. So let's get started.
Pamela, I felt really triggered by what you just said.
Yeah, well, I'm really needing some mutuality and some consideration around this thing we're partnering around. And I'm wondering if you can understand why that's important to me.
That sounds really vague. What am I supposed to say to that?
Whatever is true for you in playing the character. It doesn't really matter. Just
no, that was it. I was being the other person.
Oh, okay.
That was my genuine react.
Okay. Okay.
That's good. No, that's authentic.
Okay. And Pamela, take the time to really connect with your heart. Just breathe before you speak. Make as much inner connection as you can.
Okay. So I'm wondering if you would like to know how that might look.
No,
you're
going to empathy. That's what you just did. You went to empathy.
Okay.
Stay with expression. This is the purpose of this practice is not to teach you how to speak in a time of conflict. The purpose is for you to doggedly stay with yourself.
Yeah, well, I really need more space and time to get going what I think will be satisfying to everybody on the call. And so I'm really asking for you to respect how difficult this is, how challenging, and that I'm going to ask you to put some of your needs on the back burner for a little while.
What's the request?
Would you be willing to do that?
It's not a request, Pamela.
Okay.
You tell me what needs you're talking about that you think that I need to put on the back burner?
Okay, you got a reaction. I want to check in with you, Pamela, for a moment, because what I'm not hearing from you and what I want you and everyone who practices to do is to stay in the present moment. You keep going back to the content of what you said two sentences ago as if the person didn't have a reaction. But hearing from the other person affects you.
Yeah.
Where are you in this moment?
Yeah, just I would like you to not talk for the entire time about your own needs and be, if you'd be willing to listen to other people and what's up for them.
So you would just answering her question. I'm not hearing about where you are right now. When she said, what needs of mine are you wanting me to put on the back burner? What was going on for you when you heard that?
Like it should be obvious, and I'm frustrated that I'm even having this conversation. And
that's what I want you to find a way to articulate from your heart. The truth! Not some idea of what you should be saying. The truth.
Okay. Wow. I like that. Okay.
But the truth with care. You've been around me long enough to know what I'm talking about.
Yeah. So when I hear you say that, I'm just noticing that I feel so frustrated because it seems really obvious that all three times we've spent entirely on what's alive for you and that there are other people on the call. And I'm wondering if you can if you're aware that this might be frustrating for others.
You notice how you became like instantly, as soon
more
as
powerful.
You got it to speak the truth, you became more powerful, not necessarily pleasant, more powerful and more clear.
Yeah.
She can no longer say that it's vague.
No. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because my emotion is connecting to whatever it is I'm saying. It's not being left out.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And that's why I want you to do this exercise, is to find yourself. You're not rehearsing. You're not trying to be good. You're not trying to appease the other person. You're just trying to find yourself. Now let's see what Sarah's reaction is.
In hearing you say that to me, Pamela, I feel embarrassed that imagining that I can remember this situation, looking back on these last three calls, that I must have been speaking too much about myself, and I'm really uncomfortable. Like I feel like running away.
Now I'm feeling connected. Thank you. I'm so appreciative of being heard, and I feel instantly calmer and so much more open to you and wanting to work this out between us.
Thank you. So this is the activity. So there are a few instructions for the person in Pamela's role, the person who is practicing. One is you only speak about you. Only speak about you from the heart. Second, to whatever extent you can do that, speak of your needs and include a request. Third, speak the truth, not some idea of what the right NVC way to speak is or what would be the easiest for the other person to hear or the hardest for the other person to hear or whatever. Just the truth in this present moment. What happens in you as you hear from the other person? And the instructions for the person in Sarah's shoes, the person in the other end of the conflict, are very simple. Just be genuine. Let yourself be affected by whatever gets said and react to it in the simplest way that comes to you. Don't even think about who is this person or script them or whatever. Those are the instructions. Any questions?
So we're supposed to actually think of a situation that that really exists in our life and bring it up the way Pamela did?
Yes.
Is that how we start?
Yes. Yeah. All you need to know is what's the, you know, the one sentence version of the situation. Who is the other person? Is it somebody's mother, daughter, colleague, downstairs neighbor, whatever? And what's the line that they say to get that in the middle of the conflict makes the other person freeze or react or run away or whatever? And instead of whatever your habit is, the person who practices only expresses. Again, I want to emphasize this is not something I'm recommending as a way to resolve conflict. It's a muscle builder. Did this answer your question?
So you're thinking of something you would say as a reaction to something that somebody else has done to trigger you?
Yes. And,
okay.
And you're going to...
That you didn't do, probably, but that you can think of now.
Yes.
Okay.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Any other questions that anybody has about this activity? If you are the third person, if you're the third person in the group, your task is to remind the person who is practicing that all they talk about is themselves. If they jump to empathy, bring them back to themselves. Okay, what my suggestion would be is that you take one person situation, work with it as far as it's productive, and you know, learn from it whatever you're going to learn from it. If there's time for a second situation, do a second situation, and if there's time for a third, do a third. Most likely you'll have time for one or two, not for all of them. Okay, I would like to suggest that we go for 15 minutes in the group.
You are now in a breakout. Please begin.
Who is in this group? It's Lynette and Anne and Lynn, and David and Cheryl are on the same line.
I'd be happy to be the speaker. I can speak about a situation that I just had.
Okay.
Okay, it sounds like we're back to Anne presenting some kind of difficulty. Is that right?
Yes. I'm willing. I'm supposed to say who you're playing and what they say, right?
Yes.
So you are my mother at a recent NVC workshop that you attended with me.
Okay.
And what you say after every day of the three-day workshop, you say, I know all this stuff. I learned this back in graduate school. I already know all this.
Okay. Okay, this is your mother speaking.
So do you speak first and then I respond, or?
I think you start out, don't you?
I can't remember. Can someone help us with that?
I think that the trigger starts. That's my sense. And then you respond to that. And then it goes off from there.
Yeah,
so David, but as your mother, I think, would say something.
Well, Anne, I've heard all this before. I knew this in graduate school. There's nothing new here for me.
Oh, my gosh, Mom. I can hardly believe what I hear you saying. I got to admit, I'm disappointed. I thought we were really going to learn something together and be able to talk about it afterwards. I'm wondering, you know, how are we going to talk about it?
Well, I don't think that there's much to talk about. I mean, nothing new. We haven't really covered anything new. This is I don't know what all the fuss is about.
Oh my gosh. I've just got to be honest with you, Mom. I'm just kind of blown away. I just feel blown away with discouragement because am I hearing from you that there's really nothing to talk about because You didn't learn anything. Nothing new bubbled up. Could you tell me if I heard you right?
And you're kind of asking for feedback in a way.
I don't know how to make the request. That's what I'm struggling with.
Okay. I see. Yeah.
I don't know how to make the kind of request I'm supposed to make.
Well, you have maybe a request to, a clarifying request to make sure you understood her correctly. Is that kind of where you were going? Maybe
I just don't want to get into empathy and then ask her if that's accurate. So, okay, Mom, I'm really feeling discouraged because I had really wanted the fun and the enjoyment and the stimulation of being able to talk about what we learned. And
well, you're feeling discouraged. I kind of went along with this because you were so convinced that this would be helpful for us, and I'm disappointed too.
Yeah, I obviously, you know, if you're having this response, and I really want to connect. I really want the two of us to connect right now. I'm hearing you were really disappointed, and I'm disappointed. Now we're both disappointed, and here we sit with all this disappointment, and I spent money on a flight to come out here, and I am enjoying staying with you, but it sounds like the whole workshop was kind of a bust for you. Is that right?
Well, it is a disappointment for me, and like I said, I sort of went along with it because I respect you, but I do want to connect with you, and I thought this was a way we might be able to do that better.
Yeah, I really want to connect to
our history.
Yeah,
sorry?
I know. We certainly have our history. We certainly do. And, you know, when I hear you say you learned this a long time ago and that you already know all this stuff, and yet when I hear you talk about your relationships with us girls and John, your husband, all I hear you talking about is one conflict after another, and I would really like to know how what we heard today fits with all the conflict you're having in your life.
I just think that it's time for you girls to realize that those of us at a generation ahead of you, we know a thing or two ourselves, and a lot of this new stuff to you that you're so excited about, you know, it's just old hat to us. I'd like to connect with you, but I don't think I need all these fancy new age things to do that. Can't we just be friends?
Yeah, Mom, yeah, obviously, I love you. I want to connect, and I want to be close friends. Yeah, and I mean, it's the thing that keeps coming up for me is that you tell me about stuff that goes on with other members of the family, and I want relief for you, and I want relief for me, because I know you're miserable. And you're unhappy, and, you know, you're in a lot of pain over relationships that have been disconnected. So what I'm wanting for you and me together as mother and daughter, and also for you as a human being, is to have some skills that give you some relief from the misery. I'd like to know what you hear about, what you think about that.
And can I, this is Cheryl, I just want to say that maybe if you could stay more focused on yourself around that, I could sense that
okay.
You were, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Yeah, it's the request that's boxing me up here. So,
yeah.
Okay, thank
tricky,
you.
Isn't it?
Yeah, I'm feeling discouraged, Mom, because I want connection for the two of us, and I notice that I'm also wanting relief in our family, in our whole family situation, and the daughters and the feeling in our family, the feeling of connection in our family.
Well, I'm with you. I wanted things to be better too. It's been kind of rough. I don't know. What do you want? What can I do? What do you want me to do?
I really appreciate you saying that and being that kind of open. And I guess, you know, what I would like is just for us to keep talking honestly like this. Just keep talking honestly like this to the best of our ability, even if we really disagree. And then we just keep sorting in baby steps. I'm not sure really what else to do. That's the best I can come up with right now. How does that sound to you?
That sounds really good to me. I really do appreciate your coming all the way out here, and obviously this is important, and I think if we just keep talking to each other, maybe we can get through all this.
Yeah. Yeah, well, thanks, Mom. I believe in the process of connecting, and that's what I want with you. And I look forward to kind of keeping on this track.
Please bring your conversation to a close. This breakout session is now ending.
Thank you, Anne.
Yeah,
thank you, David. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Welcome back. I would like to take some time now to see what transpired in your groups, to answer any questions, maybe do a little more practice with anyone who wants to, and see where all of that leads us. Hi, Jason.
Wow, that was really hard. Just staying in self-expression is so scary. It's like, oh my God, that's the worst thing possible. I have to be empathizing all the time, otherwise I'm not safe.
Uh-huh. This is so powerful, isn't it?
It's amazing. And it only took like two or three or maybe maximum four exchanges before there was a big shift. I was so surprised. But just like revealing my inner world like that was just terrifying.
I'm delighted that you broke through what so many people do, which is empathizing as protection rather than as genuine, open-hearted being with the other person.
Thank you.
The vulnerability is priceless, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. But when the other person on the other side of the discussion, you know, and it feels like there's really this other side with a wall in between. I mean, it just feels like, I can't be vulnerable with that person. You know, they're just gonna bite me or scratch me or burn me or, oh, I don't know. But it was just powerful. Thank you.
Uh-huh. And you survived it. There was a shift. I'm saying this because shifting habits usually requires us to step into areas of some discomfort.
Mm-hmm.
And see that we can survive it. And it's important to tell ourselves consciously, I just did this terrifying thing and I survived it.
Yeah, I survived it, definitely.
Yeah. And that means that you now have the option of self-expression in certain moments when empathy was probably inauthentic. Very practiced, but inauthentic.
Ouch.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you.
Dean.
I found myself getting into story. It's like I had to explain what was going on rather than just going with what you wanted. And I think that it's a tough situation because it's family. And I think I'm wanting to protect her, my daughter, because she can be pretty mean to me.
So if you're not protecting her, you're protecting yourself. Let's be clear.
Yeah. And the way I'm protecting myself is by telling the story.
And
wanting to make sure that the other person understands.
And of course, the tragedy is that the more you tell the story, rather than show up with a naked vulnerability, the less likely it is that you will actually form connection.
Right, and that's exactly what happened.
So did you manage to take some steps towards more vulnerability, even with the short time?
No, the bell rang.
Okay. So let's see what else other people want to share, and maybe we'll work with you a bit to to see if you can find a vulnerability that will unlock the connection.
Thank you.
So what else? What has been people's experience? What was it like to stick with expressing yourself? Anne?
I was talking to my mother, and the person who played the role of my mother could have been her. It was kind of freaky how well he played that role. And yet I had trouble. I could talk about my needs, but I didn't know how to make a request of her. Isn't that odd? I struggled with that, and I felt like that kind of took away from the practice for me. I understand needs and requests, but I started to go toward empathy, or I started to lean toward that, and it, I don't know why that was so difficult for me. That's just one of my observations about me in self-expression. I have a hard time asking for what I want.
Did you manage to take any step towards more truth?
Yes, I felt really, I almost felt like edgy honest. I mean, I was edgy. I felt dangerously edgy honest about what I was feeling. You know, if I had been saying that really to her, I would have felt really scared. I mean, I would have done it, but I, you know, it would be really scary to say that kind of honesty to my mother.
Yeah. So there are two parts to this. To what will make the difference between this kind of like rigidly one-sided practice and what I want you to be able to do in real life, which we'll get to more next time. One piece is the experience of allowing yourself to go to the scary place is essential to really recover the capacity for vulnerability. It's absolutely essential. Then we need to find a way to say our truth with care, because to just say the truth can kind of like blast the other person, and that's not what we want to do. I'm glad you got to feel this experience of scared. That's what I want you to expand into allowing. Be that scared and speak the truth. Thank you.
Got to write that down. Thank you.
Uh-huh. Anybody else? What happened in your group? What ahas, discoveries, discomforts, learnings, questions? Tammy.
It was helpful. The people in my group had said I was getting too much into the details as opposed to making my request and then responding to that. So that was actually very helpful. Like I tend to do that because sometimes that's just my pattern, I guess. Probably trying to, if I get blamed, then I try to say, but wait, this is what happened. How am I getting blamed? But kind of staying out of the details and sticking with my request and staying in the moment.
Did it give you more of a sense of room for yourself?
What do you mean by room for myself?
That it's okay to be you and express.
Yes, I was probably a little too, because you said, don't do empathy. So I was probably felt a little too free to like vent, because normally I have to be a little more quiet.
Thank you. Cynthia.
I wanted to ask you if you could be a little more specific about when you said speak truthfully, but with care.
Mm-hmm.
How do you mean, as clearly as possible, can you maybe give a little demonstration of a truth that's not with care and a truth that would be with care?
Yeah, absolutely. We can do that by working with Jean a little, because I imagine that it will come forth. So let's do that for a few minutes, and then I'll check back with you.
All right, thanks.
Jean, are you ready?
I'm scared, yeah. But yes, I am.
Okay. Is anybody interested in being Jean's daughter? Okay. Jason, you have a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to be a daughter.
Delicious.
That's good, Jason, because you've already heard most of the story.
So tell me, what did I say, Jean?
I'm afraid of your anger.
What does the anger look like?
It's been suppressed for 40 years.
The daughter's anger?
Well, both of us.
What has she actually said to you?
Most hurtful was, I can't talk to you.
That's what the daughter says. I can't talk to you.
Yeah, we can't talk together. We can't talk to each other.
Great. So what I want you to do, we're going to work through this in a few steps. First, forget about NVC, forget about practicing, forget about anything. As soon as your daughter, Jason, says this line, I want you to just blurt out whatever is the completely unedited version of what goes on inside of you in response. Ready?
Can I use a four-letter word?
Absolutely. Go, Jason.
I can't talk to you.
Well, every time I tried to talk, you cut me off. You won't listen to me. I've been trying to find out what's wrong for 50 years, and you won't talk to me. You won't tell me what your feelings are.
Okay. So that's as bad as it's going to get, right?
It could get worse.
In terms of what you would say, it could get worse?
You still treat me like shit.
Okay. That's getting there. Okay?
Yeah.
So, first of all, just to loop back to Cynthia for a moment, I am sure that you can see, you and everyone else can see that saying you treat me like shit, or even the other things that Jean said, that is in some ways she's expressing a truth that lives in her, and it would be a stretch to think that that truth is being said with care. Right?
Yeah.
You see that, Cynthia?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Now we're going to walk through this step by step to find the truth that can be said with care. Okay, Jean. So, when you say you treat me like shit, or I've been trying to find out what's going on for you or what's wrong for 50 years and you won't tell me, when you say all of these things, I want you to tell me if you know on the deepest level, at the deepest level in your heart, what is it that you most want in this relationship, that you most want, not in terms of what your daughter is going to be like or not, but what's most important to you?
Authenticity.
Okay.
Real feelings.
Great. So now I want you to, I want us to do something again, which is have your daughter, Jason, say that line again. And I want you to express from that place that knows what's most important to you. You were saying that it's authenticity and real feelings. And your job is to just speak about what you want. Not what she is doing or not doing. Just what you want. Got it?
I'll try. Yeah.
Thank you. Jason.
I can't talk to you.
That really saddens me. That really gets to my feelings of not being a good mother.
So you're not speaking about what you want.
Oh yeah, I would really love to hear more about what you're saying.
Because what is it that is so important to you?
I want to feel closer to you.
There you go. Feel the difference, Cynthia?
Oh, definitely. Yes.
Both of them are truthful. Both of them are truthful. One of them has oodles of care in it.
Mm-hmm.
It's just brimming, overspilling with care and love.
Mm-hmm.
You got it?
Yeah, yeah. I wanted to make sure I was clear on that.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Uh-huh. So, Jean, I am really appreciating your going all the way to this very deep place, and I imagine you feel the difference inside your heart.
Yeah, I do. I'm very grateful to Jason.
Mm-hmm.
I feel he understands.
Yeah, you did the work. Can you imagine how different life would be if you could say this to your daughter?
Oh, yeah, very much. To be able to hear and not take things personally when she responds.
Yes.
She can be very cutting.
Next week, the second part will focus on how you can stay in a place of empathy. Today, I just wanted us to really focus on how we can really express the truth that lives in us and go as deep as possible with that. So I think you got this lesson. Yeah?
Great.
Thank you, Jean. Jason, anything you want to say to Jean? Any insight that you got from being her daughter? Any feedback you want to give her about how she expressed herself?
Yeah, it was such a difference. The difference between when she was sharing the lack, what she didn't have, and then you reminded her of sharing what it was that she wanted, it was like something broke open. And suddenly all of this genuine, I suddenly started hearing this sense of sincerity that I was missing before, and warmth that I was missing before. When she just said, yeah, I just want to feel how you are, and yeah, there's a big difference.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Thank you, Jason.
Mm-hmm. Okay. We have a few more minutes for any more sharing of what happened in your groups or any questions or comments about this practice that we did today. Pamela?
I just wanted to say that there's something liberating about really being present with what's there and really, really being brave enough to share it. It just occurred to me that I think one of the reasons I dread conflict so much is because I go in it with the idea that I have to suppress all of that.
Yes. Of course, if you think you need to suppress something, it's going to be so unappealing.
Yeah.
This practice gave you some jiggling out of that?
Yeah, just in terms of the delight in the almost it's like an exhilarating thing to really just be present with what's really there and really being willing to share it. I mean, I know in practice it's a lot different and that there's a lot more to finesse to do it in a way that will be constructive in a real life situation, but yeah, that was really, it's getting at something anyway.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Sarah?
I really like the reminder about being vulnerable and how that can allow for more connection, and how that if we're in that vulnerable space, even if the reaction from the other person isn't, I guess, what we would term as positive, that it doesn't have to be frightening, because we're in our hearts, and when we're in that, fully embodying that, it's like it's impossible for someone to really destroy us.
Thank you. I'm really appreciating that you brought this up, because there's some way that to really integrate and get grounded in the notion that our safety lives inside of us, and it doesn't depend on somebody else doing something just to make us feel comfortable. That gives us a tremendous amount of strength. So thank you for that. And Jason, you wanted to say more.
When I was doing the exercise with Jean, something popped up about my experience when I did the exercise, where I said that it was very scary for me. And I suddenly realized that the thinking that I have going into the situation is that these conflicts are all caused because these mean, bad, insensitive people, they only just talk about themselves. they don't even try to put themselves in the other person's shoes. And I spend all of my time empathizing because I don't want to be like them.
Yeah. Yeah. So I would only want you to empathize when it's clear to your heart that that's what would be connecting. The choice about whether to empathize or express, for me, is made on the basis of what's most likely to connect, to move us closer to the place where we're both relating easily to each other's needs and able to hold all the needs together, which is the basis on which a resolution can arise. Empathizing so as not to be like somebody else is not likely to contribute to real connection. I'm sure you see that.
Yes, I realize suddenly that I'm to avoid my own self-judgments.
Yeah. Yeah. And so then the empathy is on top of some layer of fear or self-judgment or anything like this. And the other person, if they have any sensitivity, they will notice it. And your empathy can fall flat.
Mm.
Have you had that experience?
Yes.
Okay. Now you know why. Thank you. I want to give you, a little bit of thoughts about what to do this week. What I would suggest that you do is that as much as possible in any of the conflict situations that you may have worked with or in new conflicts that arise, that you really give attention in full to all the ways that you protect yourself and don't show up with your full vulnerability. Because let me tell you, empathy from the heart is an extraordinarily vulnerable process if we do it right. And so either way, we're going to focus quite a bit on empathy next week. Whether you express yourself or empathize, what is it that you do to protect yourself? And is there some way that you can unprotect yourself and show up with full vulnerability? Whether you express or empathize is secondary to that experience of opening your heart to be present in the situation. I'd like to use the last minute or two to just hear from a couple of people. What are you taking with you as you approach this next week? What's something that happened today that you believe will stay with you and inform your coming week? Just a one-liner little nugget. Ronnie.
Staying present.
Staying present. Thank you. Cecily.
I recognized in my small group, in the way I participated, was I came in comfortably with the sense of being right, and I recognized that that was my safety. And through so much of all my conflicts recently, that's really how I work and how I have tricky little ways of thinking that I'm working in my heart and I'm not getting to my vulnerability. So this has been huge. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Kolya and then Lori, and then we'll say goodbye until next week.
What really touched me was, and challenges me, is being in naked vulnerability.
Thank you. Thank you. And Lori, you get the final word for today.
What I'm going to take with me this week is an awareness of scarcity thinking, of coming from a place of scarcity. I was really appreciating that early in the discussion.
Thank you. Thank you, everyone, and see you again for another chapter of this. Bye-bye.